It's 8:15 on the ticket, so I am back to work today. And here in this segment, I want to talk about why I've been out the last week. Always a dicey proposition on this show, and we have to talk about losing a family member or something tough that we've gone through. So, Jer, in case I can't make it through certain points, in case I get a little choked up, I want you to have space people ready to roll.
That's been our go-to. That's all we've done since you've been away. We've played space people.
So fun to listen to
like
that song
100 times.
Detail. Rick Beato did a whole "What makes this song great" on this.
That would be great. So, Jer, if you hear me get a little choked up, or if I call for it, just have space people ready, and then we'll let it roll, and I'll tell you when I'm ready to go again.
I'm ready.
Okay, good. So, yes, my dad passed away last Monday, and I've been out since then. So, first of all, thank you to George and Gordon for their support over the last week. You guys were great with your messages and your help, and just handling the show for a week on short notice. And so, really appreciate that.
We only wrecked the show like 12 times. There's a lot of body damage to it, but yeah, we're able to get through. That's no biggie, because you've had to do that for us before.
That's right.
Through the years, so yeah. That's just part of what we do.
Yeah, and thank you to the station, Dan Bennett and the Catman, for giving me the time that I needed to be away and handle all of that. And thank you to all the P1s for your messages, either email or Twitter or however you reached me. Condolences and just some really warm, heartfelt stuff. We're one big family, so I really appreciated all of that.
Yeah, the P1s are amazing. In times like that, that's awesome that they reached out to you.
Damn it. Already need space people. Jer? Yeah, 1 minute in, I needed space
people.
It's got
to be the reporter lead. That's probably
that's
the best
right.
part about
okay.
this.
It's an emotional subject.
All right, Jer.
We good. Can handle.
Okay, so yeah, Dad passed last Monday. He was 88, so that's a good long life. I believe on the chart, in your 80s, that's a life well lived. And we were all very, very happy to have him around for 88 years. I will admit, I thought he was going to make it to 100 because he was in pretty good health for most of his life. He was miraculously only on one pill at the age of 88.
Wow.
And it was a preventative.
A blue one? Hopefully it wasn't a blue one.
No, it wasn't the blue one.
Okay.
And he would always make the point, and it's only a preventative. So he did experience, you know, like everybody who makes it to 88, you have a couple of trips to the hospital here and there, but he had really good health for the great majority of his life. So I thought he would make it to, you know, 95, 100. So that's why it's weird to say that it was kind of shocking that he passed away at the age of 88. But he had a pretty rapid decline the last couple of weeks. So thankfully there wasn't a lot of suffering involved. And my sister was able to make it up last Monday from Austin with her family. And so we were with him there in his final couple of hours. So at least we had that and a little bit of closure. But still really weird that he's gone. And I know P1s are familiar with Dad because I've talked about him a lot over the last 27 years. And we've had him on the show from time to time. We had him on not too long ago. Was it the 50th? Anniversary of the JFK shooting?
Yeah, that's right.
I think it was the 50th, and we were out at Half Price Books, and he joined us out there, and he told the story of being in downtown Dallas that day. And we had him on for, it was either one or two segments, and he was working in downtown Dallas that year, and he and his sister were both working downtown Dallas, and he went down to the street to watch the motorcade go by. And there's even a picture that we found that was in the Dallas Morning News where you can see Dad in the background a couple of rows back as John and Jackie drive by. And as he told the story, it was completely surreal because he sees the president. He goes into with his buddy into a little cafe, and they have a sandwich. They hear all hell breaking loose, sirens and whatnot, but they just thought, well, that's the presidential motorcade. You know, it's just, that's the noise from a motorcade when the president goes through downtown. So they didn't understand what was happening. They go back up to their office, and my dad's sister calls him and says, the president's been shot. And Dad said, no, I just saw him. he's fine. He just drove by me, and he couldn't put two and two together. But to hear him tell how that whole thing unfolded, he saw John F. Kennedy about 1 minute before Kennedy was killed.
Just moments before, yeah. He did a great job that morning. I remember that, and Gordo and I were talking about this last week when on Father's Day, and this is after my dad had passed, but you interviewed Gordo's dad, and Gordo interviewed your dad, and they were both great. You guys did a great job with that.
Yeah, and my nephew also interviewed my dad, his grandfather, for a school project about 5 years ago and did 3 hours with him. So that's great that our family has that, you know, dad who loved to tell stories, telling all those stories. And so we have that forever. So that's great. Yeah, this was weird because it hit me a lot harder than when my mom passed 15 years ago. And I think a lot of that is the father-son dynamic. You know, when you're a son, you obviously love your mother and she nurtured you and there's a special bond there. But it's different with father-son. Did you guys find that as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were several reasons that my father's death, I think, affected me more than my mom's death. And one of them, I think, is the same-sex, you know, parent. When that passes, that's such a shadow self of you.
Yes.
That I think it hits you, your own mortality hits you a lot. And as a boy, your dad was Superman, so Superman dying is an earth-shaking event.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that dynamic to it. And I was telling Gordo last week, for all of us, I guess it was our father who passed second and last. And maybe it's just because it happened in that order that made us technically orphans.
Yeah.
You know? That's the other big factor. The first morning you wake up and you don't have any parents on this earth anymore.
Yeah.
Is that shakes you. That makes you feel, I don't care how old you are, you feel extremely vulnerable because there's no one out guarding the point anymore.
Yeah.
There's no one in front of you and death in a way.
Yeah.
Because you're the next in line. It's a strange feeling.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think the other thing why this was so much harder than when my mom passed was he was around 15 years longer. You know, she passed 15 years ago. So when someone is just in your life for that much longer, you're probably naturally going to grow closer and have more experiences. And since he was in Dallas the last, well, basically since she passed, they were living in Galveston. And then we moved him up here just to be closer to family. All of his sisters are here and nieces and nephews, and I'm here. So I got to spend a lot more time with him the last 10, 12, 15 years. So we grew closer because we would see each other every week or a couple times a week. So you had that natural closeness that was built in, which made it even more difficult. So yeah, now all of our parents are gone on this show, and that is a really weird, weird feeling.
I know.
Yeah, that's an emptiness that it does get better, as I told you last week, but it takes a while. There's an emptiness there that takes a while to get used to.
Like Matthew McConaughey, he was born in he was raised in Longview. We forgot to ask Matthew this, and I know I missed that interview, but did he mention anything about being a Longview Lobo?
A little bit, yeah. I think we mentioned,
I don't think so. He mentioned your dad, Longview. Knowing your dad there, but
yeah, hanging out with your dad.
Because if I had been able to take part in that interview, I was going to ask him if he and my dad crossed paths at Longview High, even though they were there about 40 years apart. But he was probably a native Texan. He was born in Breckenridge, and he grew up in Longview. And then he went into the Navy, and going through his things over the weekend, guys, I found a box of stuff from his time in France. He was stationed in Paris for 3 years. It was the most unbelievable treasure trove of things I had never seen. And I'm sure you guys, I'm sure everybody, P1s who've lost parents, when they go through their stuff, you find stuff that you're like, wow, what? Why didn't he ever tell me about this or show these things to me? It's just a box full of menus and postcards and notes and receipts and newspaper clippings from this extraordinary time in his life. And I haven't even you know, I spent probably 2 or 3 hours going through just that box alone, and I want to spend more time. But that's these little treasures that you discover after they leave, or it's sad, but it's also kind of rewarding.
Yeah, that's so cool that he got to do that. And I remember when we were in college, and we were, you and I talked about this last week, your dad, when we went to see them at spring break in Colorado, told us about his time in the Navy. And your dad was a great storyteller. And as I said last week, I think one of his greatest traits was his ability to listen to other people, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as he told Skip and I about his days in the Navy, he also had asked us, you know, what we were doing. What were we interested in doing? Where did we want to go? And what did we want to see? And I think that was one of your dad's greatest qualities, outside of just being an overall really sweet, sweet person. That was part of it. He cared what other people had to say.
Yeah, he was a good listener and a good storyteller. And he told that story about how he ended up in Paris like 2 or 3 years ago at Christmas, and I had never heard it before. 85 years, or, you know, for me, 54 years with him, and I had never heard it. He was stationed in Alaska drinking that Mississippi mud, and he'd been up there, and one of his jobs at that base on Kodiak Island was he was the assistant to the base commander. Well, he obviously did a really good job, because the base commander, when his time was up, and I think Dad's time was up there at the same time, said, you've been so great, I'm going to reward you. Your next orders are going to be to the Naval Air Station in Corpus Christi, because I know you're from Texas, so I'm going to send you back home. And Dad said, all due respect, that's great, and I appreciate that, but I joined the Navy to serve my country, but also to see the world. I don't want to go back to Texas. I'm not ready to go back to Texas. And the commander said, oh, okay. Well, just go to Washington, D.C., and I'll issue new orders. So Dad went to Washington, D.C., said he had this apartment there for 2 weeks, did nothing, you know, was just waiting for his orders. Gets a knock on the door one day, and the guy says, you need to go get your shots. You're leaving in 24 hours. And Dad thought, shots, because he was thinking, I'm going to be transferred somewhere in the U.S. He says, where am I going? He says, you're going to Paris. Space
That's
people?
So cool.
Space people? Okay. And I always loved that story, because I knew how much he wanted to see the world. And that also was so cool of that base commander to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that speaks to the job that your dad did for him, that he rewarded him with the chance to go to Paris. And I remember him telling us about his days in the Navy. I didn't realize he was in for 8 years. That's a long time.
And his last 2 years, he worked at the Pentagon. And my Aunt Mary told me this story over the weekend, that when they were transferring him from Paris to the Pentagon, the Navy had to do a background check on him. So Naval Intelligence came to Longview and asked all around, you know, like Dad's friends and family, you know, vetted him. And my Aunt Mary said, Bob was the coolest guy in town. We just thought he was so cool because Naval Intelligence was coming to Longview to talk about him working in the Pentagon.
Yeah, I bet that was a big deal in Longview, Texas, all those years back.
So, yeah, he got out of the Navy, met my mom. They had a spare son and a daughter, and they got to live in some cool places, Colorado, where they fell in love with the mountains, and they were always beach people. So they ended up in Galveston. That's where they kind of lived out their retirement. And then he moved to Dallas, as I mentioned, the last 10 years or so. A couple of people I wanted to thank. His community where he lived is Independent Living Center, Juliet Fowler, which is in Lakewood in East Dallas. It's yeah. Such a great place. And when my sister and I were looking for a place for him to live, we visited 6 or 7 facilities. Fowler was the last one we went to, and we kind of looked at each other like, what's going on here? Everybody here is really nice, residents and staff. Everybody's got a smile on their face. Everybody's in a good mood. Is something up here? Are they putting on a show for us? But they didn't know we were coming, so it wasn't a show, and it ended up being just a wonderful place for him to live. So many nice people, and he made so many good friends, and we were over there a lot this weekend talking to some of the residents, and they just all had the same thing to say. You know, we loved being around him, and he was such a sweetheart of a guy, and he helped take care of our flower beds here, and he told great stories, and So that was good to hear how beloved he was awesome. There and how much he enjoyed his final years there. So the folks at Fowler were great. And you guys know this, hospital stays can be very taxing. And we've had in my family just some so-so hospital experiences before. But he spent his last couple of weeks at Medical City, and I'd never had an experience with the Medical City Hospital staff. They were unbelievably nice. Like every single person, nurses, doctors, the people that brought around the food trays, the physical therapists, the x-ray technicians, the MRI, everybody we dealt with was just, they could not have been nicer. And I just kept saying to my sister and my wife and, this is weird. I can't believe this hospital is so great. So thanks to everybody at Medical City.
There is a big difference from hospital to hospital, because we were in and out of hospitals too in my parents' final years, and there would be some hospitals that are just kind of and then other ones where there was a contagious positivity.
Yeah,
among
yeah.
the staff.
That's nice,
and it makes such a difference in the spirits and souls of the families that have to be in there.
And as you guys are familiar with, that week after you lose, in this case, a parent, it is the most difficult week to navigate because you are grieving, you're mourning. But if you're the responsible party in the family that's left behind, you're also having to do all of this business.
And were you executor?
And crossing the T's and dotting the I's and planning the funeral and plan, which, by the way, is very difficult in COVID. We ended up not doing any kind of indoor mass that he would have wanted, but we just couldn't do that indoors, and we didn't do any kind of memorial celebration. We just had a very small graveside service, so we were all outdoors and everybody wearing masks. But that's really kind of the extent of what you can do. And we tried to do that as well as we could, but it's very difficult, no matter what, even if you've got the virus to deal with or not, when you are grieving but also having to conduct business, it's very hard.
Yeah, and P1 should know this, too. Even before you left the show last Monday, you were dealing with these final days and still trying to do the show, too, and I know that's really taxing. You've had quite the month.
Yeah, I was in the room with him, trying to watch a Cowboy game, and he didn't want to watch the Cowboys because he said they were so bad.
He'd had it with him. He'd already written off the season.
But yeah, when you're dealing with that and going back and forth, and it's very, very tough. But
did your dad do much pre-planning as far as, because obviously you already had, he was buried next to your mother, so
right.
They already had those in place. A lot of families get caught, without any funeral plots, without any kind of idea as to what even kind of service that the dearly departed even wanted. Was he good about planning for his death?
Yeah, he was, and his sisters helped a lot in the, the day or two after, and helping with the funeral home and, different plans like that, and helping us. Because when you're grieving, you can't think straight. Like my sister and I weren't quite thinking straight on everything. So my aunts helped in kind of focusing us because they knew him, longer than we did. So they had different ideas of what he would have liked. And so it was a collaborative effort. And he did make it easier because, yeah, like you said, he had the plot picked out and all of that. So, yeah, very sad, very, very tough week. Hardest week of my life. Never experienced anything like that. I feel... Yesterday, for the first time, I felt like I was coming out of the cocoon a little bit. So, and it's actually been good to get back to work today and talk sports and kind of focus. But thanks again to you guys, and thanks again to all the P1s.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely. And like you said, a life well lived. That defined your dad's life.
Yeah, and he was a really, really sweet guy. And my cousin Tony, when we were kids, nicknamed him Peace Loving Man. And I think one birthday he got him a T-shirt that said Peace Loving Man, and that's what he was. He was just, he just loved life, and he loved his garden, and he was just sweet to everybody, and was a definite peace-loving man. So he will be missed.